B-Pod Studios.
Are you ready for this? Do. This is Felt and Mass.
Oh, that's stupid. My God.
Children's song.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, hi, everybody. Welcome into the program. Felger and Maserati coming to you on Monday, August 1st, from our temporary Townford Tire Studios at the NBC Media Center. Need a white Maz?
Yeah, one, please.
And Needham. We got Maz and Murray alongside. We played no sound there off the top because, it's a reentry Monday, and I think there's a bunch of stuff on the table that we can talk about whatever you want. So I don't think there's truly like a lead story. What's the lead news item in Boston? I mean, I know there's no more important person that was worth talking about than Bill Russell, obviously. You want to talk about like an immediate important story. I don't know if there's anything more important to maybe the economic and entertainment well-being of this program and a lot of you out there than the gambling bill. So I thought we'd start off today with sort of like some opening takes like we would on a Friday and just talk about what interests you the most. Okay. And what continues to interest me, Maz?
Yeah.
Is the Patriots with these new offensive coaches and what I keep hearing down there. And I know it's not original. I know we've been doing this for 6 months, but I continue to be blown away by it. Every time I think about it, every time I consider it, every time I think about it anew, I am blown away at what they're doing. Blown away. And pessimistic about its chances of succeeding. So you all know it's Joe Judge and Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick, and they're sort of ushering the offense into a new era with some tweaks, simplifying the Shanahan scheme and the running game. Patricia's been calling the plays ostensibly, but Bill got in on that. And, you know most of the details by now. Did you know also, though, that the Patriots' offense so far at training camp has sucked? Do you understand how bad it sucked? And I, like, not that I would know.
Yep.
But just some of the reports. I mean, this one, Jimmy put this one in front of me right before the show, and it blew me away. Greg Bedard tweeted today after today's first padded practice.
This is a good one.
This is his tweet. Let the record show that the Patriots' first padded period using the Shanahan run scheme was an abject disaster. Was an abject disaster, among the worst I've seen covering the league.
He's been around a long time doing this, too.
That's great. This is great.
Here's how, and then he ran down the play-by-play of how the padded practice session went. False start, interception, stuffed run, 2 yard run, stuffed run, good plus run, overthrow stuff, no gain stuff. He says the last three plays were the first team offense against the third team defense, which won the line of scrimmage handily. All right, that was on the heels of a cut that I heard from over the weekend. Phil Perry was on the weekend show with Gasper, Murray and Gasper, sans Murray. And, Jimmy, do you have that? Here's Phil Perry reporting on what he saw Saturday when he watched the Patriots' offense. Go ahead.
I thought today was ugly at the end for the offense. There was a lot of, I just said this to Tom Curran, and he just politely on Twitter pointed out this one comment that I'm sure will get people stirring. I said, they had a few reps out there that were a little reminiscent of the Tim Tebow era, Tom.
Oh, love okay, that. You can stop. Yeah, okay, you can stop.
Boy.
The Tim Tebow era.
In New England.
Okay. Yeah.
Was that like 3 weeks in 2013?
So what are they doing? Why are they doing it? I mean, this began at the Super Bowl when we heard Joe Judge was coming back. And I think it's going to be a cluster, at least to begin the season. It's apparently a cluster to begin training camp. And nothing interests me more than that story. What interests you the most?
Murray, you go first.
Well, I mean, given his age, I suppose it wasn't that big of a surprise to hear that Bill Russell passed away yesterday, but it did still sting to hear. you know, he's, for me personally, he's one of only like two icons, like true icons I've ever had the opportunity to meet. And I didn't even end up talking to him because I was frankly too intimidated. It was like when I saw him in person, I'm like, I was like, holy crap, it's Bill Russell. Like, it's Bill. I just, he's one of those guys. He's the embodiment of winning. He's everything that I think you could ever ask for as just a sports fan. And I know he meant so much more than that, and rightfully so. But, I mean, just some of the stats that fly around on social media yesterday: played in 10 game sevens, won all of them, 21-0 in winner take all games between the NBA, NCAA, and Olympics. He's the greatest winner in team sports history. He is the greatest champion in organized sports history, period. Fact. Like, that's it. And because of how he was treated here in an unfortunate time in this city's history, like, I almost wonder if we underappreciate who Bill Russell is. It does kind of feel that way. So, you know, he meant so much just in terms of the sports and the league, first black coach, and you see some of the clips, too, and how he talked to Kobe Bryant, Kevin Garnett when he first got here. He treated the NBA stars in so many different generations like his own sons, and literally said that, like, you're like a son to me, to some of these guys. So at the very least, in terms of the NBA and his playing career, I think his six should be retired league-wide. I know I'm not alone in thinking that. Saw a lot of that on social media yesterday. The NBA should retire six, and no one should wear it ever again.
How about you, Maz?
Okay, so believe it or not, I'm with Murray. I am most interested in Bill Russell. And I think, you know, but obviously Murray addressed that. So I'm going to take the Red Sox because I was at Fenway Park over the weekend. They're 3.5 out. The deadline is now 28 hours away. I mean, we're closing in on the trade deadline. They got to make a clear choice here. They lost 2 out of 3 to your Brewers. And after watching what I watched over the weekend, sell.
Oh, God. Yes.
Sell.
Shame on you.
And let me tell you that.
Shame on you.
I agree. Shame on me is right. I don't feel good about saying this. So believe me when I tell you, this is not what I want. But at the end of the day, I think you have to make a decision about what is best for your organization. And this team is a mess. Now, look, the good news is this. They put a lineup on the field yesterday that actually had more big leaguers than minor leaguers in it. And they played a representative game that was clean and error-free. But the news on Trevor Story is a killer. You're not going to have him back till the middle of August at the earliest, if he comes back at all. Chris Sale may or may not be done for the year. Nathan Eovaldi is not the same. And so if I'm making a decision based on what is best for the organization, sell.
For but what?
Can I?
So I can get what back?
Who cares about what you get back?
No, that's not what I mean.
So you mean what the organization
gets
back?
Yes, right.
I thought you meant as like a fan.
No.
No, as a
what I get back is I wake up the next day and I do the show either way. No, as a Red Sox follower, as the Red Sox, what do they get back?
So I'm glad you asked that question because I'm not saying giveaway. You're doing no giveaways. Okay, but if there's a deal that you can, if there's something you can get by giving up a J.D. Martinez or by giving up, I don't even think you're going to get all that much for Eovaldi, if you want to know the truth. He's not throwing the ball well.
I don't think you can get anything for either.
No, I wonder about Martinez. I think Martinez has got value. He's a good professional hitter. He's got postseason experience. And so, look, I recognize there's a gray. They were awful in two of those games over the weekend. And I shouldn't say awful for the entirety of the game, but they're inept offensively. Their pitching can't keep them close in games on most nights or most days. They're just not good enough. I don't feel good saying that. Let me tell you that.
What are they going to get back for J.D. Martinez?
I don't know. So this is why I say don't give it away. If they make a bad deal, I'm with you.
Are they going to get a top 20 prospect?
Maybe. I mean, the guy they're talking about getting from allegedly they can get a top 5 prospect from the Mets. Okay, now, I looked the kid up that they're talking about. I don't love the profile.
What position?
He's an outfielder / DH, okay, which is part of the thing I don't like. But I'm convinced somebody's going between now and 6 o'clock tomorrow. And I'm not as adamant against it as I was at the end of last week because, boy, couple of those games and a couple of those lineups turned your stomach.
So I'm okay with them selling J.D. Martinez if it's part of a bigger...
Yeah, if they get something.
...melange of moves. Sorry for the stupid word. A bit, you know, a series of moves that nets them something for this year's team. So, yes, fine. I'm not wedded to any particular player. What I'm wedded to is getting worse down the stretch. I think that would be a disgrace. They're not going to get anything good enough. And this is different than if they were at the bottom of the league and you had a bona fide guy that you could get a haul. That's different. If you have a guy that could get a haul, fine, get a haul. H-A-U-L, a haul of assets. You're not getting a haul of assets for 30-something-year-old J.D. Martinez, who's a rental? You're not getting anything. What are you going to get for Nathan? And when I say anything, it's like I go back, and I'll go into this a little bit deeper later, but I go back and look at the prospects you got in that Renfro-Jackie Bradley
right.
You know, trade you got last year. So you sold Renfro for and took on Jackie Bradley so you could get these two prospects, one of whom is Jeter Downs at best, one of whom is a pinch runner, the Hamilton kid.
Yep.
You tell me what he projects as.
Nothing.
He's nothing.
Yeah, I didn't like that deal from the beginning.
He's a pinch runner. And the other kid was like the 21st, 17th, somewhere in there prospect, who I just did a little bit of reading up on today, is worse than Hunter Renfro. I mean, it's going to be nobody. I don't know. So I'd rather have J.D. Martinez for the 2 months just to see what the hell happens. And not that I would predict it, but go on a run in the postseason, then just have another stiff down in the minor leagues, because that's what you're trading these guys for.
Okay, I'm just not convinced it's going to totally be a stiff. That's what I'm saying. If there's something you can do, so I'm not disagreeing with you. You're reading into this. I never said giveaway. I'm not looking to give away. But what has J.D. Martinez really meant to this team this year? He's got, what, 8 home runs? 9 home runs? So he was 0 for 24 before yesterday?
That's not how I look at it.
So I know how you look at it. You just said how you look at it.
No, I look at it as not what he's done this year. I know what he's done this year. What could he be for you going forward?
Yeah, he could be pretty good, but I don't know that it's going to make a difference. And so, and again, let me specify this part of it. I hate that I am even saying this.
You should.
I hate it.
You shouldn't be able to look yourself in the mirror.
No, you realize what they are. They're trash.
But they're not good enough.
Okay. Folks, whatever you want. Bill Russell, the Patriots, the Red Sox heading into tomorrow's deadline, the gambling bill, Deshaun Watson. There's a lot to get to. It's a reentry Monday, so we're here for you. We'll take your calls right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Most popular afternoon radio show in Boston.
I don't want to know what this means.
Felger and Mass.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about.
I don't even know what I'm talking about. Like, what? I don't know what that is.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Difference, you know, just philosophically between calling an offensive play and calling a defensive play, you know, is the timing of making sure you get the play in on time, you know, trying to give everybody enough opportunity to comprehend what's going on, the substitutions at the line of scrimmage, depending on how long the play is, so that you can get that out. And then just really a lot of times you're looking at the situation going, all right, this is this play on this one, and then this is what I'm going to call on the next play because, you know, you have some sort of assumption of what may happen on that play.
Are you the one scripting?
We all kind of handle all of the coaches all the way across the board. We all kind of work together. Coach Belichick, obviously, you know, helps us a lot, too. And you know, myself and Joe and Nick Cayley and Vinny and Billy, we're all it's a big divide and conquer at some points where we have a lot of work to get done through the course of the night. And everybody really understands what we're trying to do.
Patricia. So there, what's the analogy that you used, Maz, in our pre-show email chain?
Oh, so I said when I started listening to the Patricia sound this morning, okay, I looked at it and there was a question about Jonnu Smith, and I said to myself, why the hell is someone asking Patricia about Jonnu Smith? Like, my gut reaction was, and then I had to catch myself and I went, holy crap, that's right. He's on the offensive side of the ball. Like, I don't know if it was like Monday morning cobwebs or what, but I went, good God, I have to listen to Matt Patricia now talk about Jonnu Smith. And I found myself saying, why would I listen to this guy about Jonnu Smith? He doesn't know anything about offense. And then I thought, this is the equivalent of the Dallas Cowboys making Dan Quinn their play caller. Think of that, right? Dan Quinn, the defensive coordinator of the Seahawks, who became the head coach of Atlanta, then went to Dallas. If Dallas did that, if Dallas made Dan Quinn their offensive coordinator and or play caller, wouldn't we be looking at them going, what the hell is that?
Of course. Why are you talking about Ezekiel Elliott? That's not your side of expertise. You're a defensive guy.
Like, why should I listen to you about Ezekiel Elliott, right? That's how I felt. It hit me in the stomach this morning, and I know we've been talking about this for months, but when I saw the audio files and it said Matt Patricia on Jonnu Smith, I went, what? Like, how is it? Why should I care about what he thinks about Jonnu Smith?
Is it really that much different than Rex Ryan talking about, I want one of them pistol deals? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Is it really that different? They've made Dan Quinn the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. Like, when I thought of it in those terms, I went, holy crap, like, this is real. And maybe that's what it was, that it was real. All of a sudden, it wasn't just, this is what they're going to do. Now it was, they're actually out there, and this is what is happening. And I can't tell you why it hit me like it did this morning. But I went, oh, my God. Matt Patricia is telling me about Jonnu Smith instead of about, you know, Dante Hightower. Like, on Dante Hightower, I had enough trouble taking him seriously. But now Jonnu Smith, like, what is he really going to fix, Jonnu Smith?
And there's guys down there, Phil Perry and Greg Bedard, not Patriot haters, not anti-Belichickites. Greg Bedard said today, the first set of 11-on-11 offense that he saw today was among the worst he's ever seen covering the league.
The term was abject disaster.
Phil Perry said over the weekend that some of the reps felt like Tim Tebow. Felt like the Tim Tebow run Patriot offense when he was here in camp, whatever, 10 years ago, whatever that was.
That's so bad. He was here for a month. It was a complete, that was also an abject disaster. That wasn't going to work.
It was horrible.
Because that feels to me like a story that still just, it blows me away. So I still find like that the most compelling thing that we're talking about. I'm not telling you it's more important than Bill Russell, more important than the gambling bill or, you know, any of that. I'm just saying the thing that just like, still amazing, like that's still the thing I just can't get past. All right, your thoughts. Of course, none of the login stuff works here. I've called and texted our tech people. Guess what they told me to do?
Reboot.
Oh, really? Really? Reboot it. Thank you. Why did I bother calling Dennis? Charlie, why? Reboot. I know it. Yes. Turn it on and turn it off. I got that.
Well, have you tried unplugging it?
I got that part. I rebooted it. Give me a login that'll work, okay? Do you have the call screen up, Maz?
Yeah, I do. I have the call screen right here, yeah.
So why don't you run the board? Go ahead.
Okay, so here we go. Let's go to, we don't have any Patriots calls on the board.
Call, okay. Put whatever you want.
Okay, so let's go to Larry in Newburyport. Once in a while, I change my mind about Hunter Renfro. Go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, Tony, you make me laugh. You know, last week on this very show, you said, I didn't mind the Hunter Renfro trade. It's what they got in return. So correct. Today you said, I never liked that trade from the beginning. Tony, let me tell you something. The Hunter Renfro trade is going to go down as one of the worst trades the Red Sox ever made. But probably close to Lyle Fakeda. This guy was a steal. $7.5 million he would have made this year. How would he look at right field now, Tony?
Yeah, so Larry, again, to me, this is just because I don't like Hunter Renfro as a player. I'm not telling you he's all that good.
When he says you changed your mind, what did you change your mind on?
I didn't change my mind on anything. I said I didn't like the deal from the beginning based on what they got back. Okay, not on the fact that they gave up Hunter Renfro. I didn't like what they got back. So now if Larry's trying to say, well, now you want the Red Sox to trade J.D. Martinez on top of it too, what are they going to get back? So they'll never make another trade because they're afraid of effing it up? Now, you want to tell me that if you don't believe in Chaim Bloom's ability to make a good deal at this deadline, then I can't disagree with you.
So listen. Go ahead.
No, that would worry me. That would worry me because Bloom seems intent on finding all of these quote-unquote undervalued assets, diamonds in the rough, guys that other people are overlooking. And sometimes the right play is the obvious play. Just go get yourself the best available player that you can get. It doesn't have to be someone who's cheap. It doesn't have to be someone who's flying under the radar. It just has to be someone who's good and can play. It's really that simple. And now the Bloom discussion is a different discussion. And I don't know what's up Larry's ass in Newburyport, but I can't sit here and tell you in good conscience when I was criticizing the way Hunter Renfro played defense and told you that he was overrated, that I was heartbroken when they traded him away. He's a replaceable player, but what they got back, they traded him for minor leaguers. Their big league club got worse.
Because, well, yes, right. But the caliber of player we're talking about, we're talking about J.D. Martinez in his mid-30s with, you know, 6-8 weeks, whatever this is, of service time to the club that's acquiring him. Nate Eovaldi at the end of his contract after 2 elbow surgeries. How old is he? Also up for a contract. What is the caliber of prospect you're going to get back for that? So that for me is not as much an indictment on Chaim Bloom, and you should definitely be questioning him. I'm questioning what you're going to get back for that. Almost never works. Like, the odds of that guy hitting is just long, even for the best guys. Do you understand what I'm saying now?
Yeah, but Mike, the same type of data is out there in the reverse. In other words, all the analysts and GMs will tell you, well, you shouldn't pick up help at the deadline because those guys end up not having an impact anyway. So, like, I just don't believe in that. Like, to me, you still got to take your chances when they're there. Where I'm at with this, because again, I agree with you on, I don't want to give this guy away for nothing. So I'd rather keep him than do that. But if there's a deal to be made for something good, and I suppose I won't know what that is till I see it, I would do it. I would. They're bad. It's a bad baseball team. And they played better yesterday, but the lapses, the mistakes, the walks in the late, the game on Friday night pissed me off to no end. You know, it was a pretty good competitive game. 2-1 going into the ninth.
Was that the one where Duran wouldn't dive back into first base on the pickoff attempt?
That was Saturday, I think.
Okay, go ahead. It all blends together.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you can't. There's so many mistakes. But it's a 2-1 game. You're in it. Milwaukee's bullpen's really good, but you're in it. You're only a run away. Salamora goes out there in the ninth, walks a guy, gives up a hit. Then there's a double off the wall. Now you're down 4-1. So it just goes right out the window. And it's the same crap over and over and over again. And, you know, and the Story thing to me, I will admit the Trevor Story injury, now that it's a hairline fracture and he's out another couple of weeks, however that happened, was sort of a, you know, well, now even if you keep everybody, what do you got? What do you got? And so that was the piece that pushed me over the edge.
Okay, I'll pick another one, Tonto.
Oh, sorry, I forgot that you don't have the call screen up. Let's go to Mark in New Hampshire on Bill Russell.
Yeah.
Mark, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, go.
Okay, quickly. Last 24 hours, Russell dying. I think if I were a black athlete, I'd fully see that Boston is racist. The legacy of Bill Russell, at best, has been patronization. This guy should be on Boston's Mount Rushmore. The flags in Massachusetts should be at half-mast. And let's talk about the big dig. Williams Tunnel, huh? How many championships? This guy had 11 championships in 13 years. And, Mike, in all fairness, I can't say you've helped his legacy by the fact that you're saying that all these championships won in the 50s and 60s were against slow white men that are 5'6" tall. So quickly, last point is, then let's reconsider Babe Ruth. He didn't have to compete against Leitz, and he's unopposed in his legacy. And Murray, I think he deserves an asterisk. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Let's do this. Let's get a headline from Big Jim Murray. We'll come back and discuss some of the things that he said, along with all your other great phone calls that at some point I'll be able to access after the highly paid tech department tells me to what again?
Reboot.
Oh, reboot. Thank you. That's great advice. I never.
Yeah, try control alt delete.
Never would have thought of that. Here's the headlines first.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Maz.
I'm not even going to look it up because I'd rather just deliver that tape.
Facts be damned.
Yep.
Make the shirts.
Yep.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, pick up on that Bill Russell call. Your thoughts?
I just think that Murray said that if it's possible, he's underappreciated. And the caller echoed similar sentiments. I think they're right. I think when you really think about it, Bill Russell was an absolute icon, like an American treasure, not just a Boston thing. And the he marched with Martin Luther King in 63, the I Have a Dream speech. He was with him. He stood by Muhammad Ali. I mean, you know, he belongs in the same breath as Martin Luther King and Muhammad Ali and Jackie Robinson. And that's beyond the winning. Muhammad Ali was an international phenomenon because of the popularity of boxing at that time. And, you know, Jackie Robinson is regarded as a major barrier breaker. I really do think Russell's on the same level. And I think for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just because of, you know, we focus on the winning part of it or not, but I do think he's underappreciated in that regard. This guy was icon for an American icon.
So I'm curious why. Because I think, you know, the younger generation, and I include us, you know, we're both in our early to mid-50s.
Right.
Never really saw him play, and so we all came after. So we don't fully appreciate him the same way we don't appreciate someone else we saw who, you know, excelled in the 60s because we never saw it, and it's before our generation.
Mickey Mantle or someone like.
Does the older white generation in Boston resent him?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think that's ultimately what it is. It's
gotta maybe.
Be. That
yeah.
there's a certain part of the population here, unfortunately, that looked at Bill Russell as an uppity or too mouthy, you know. And, you know, Gasper wrote about how he was unparalleled in his career and also for what he did off the floor. But he had a thing in there, in an FBI file on Bill Russell, they refer to him as a Negro who would not sign autographs for white children. So that's the reality of it, because, like, again, given the statistics, what he did on the floor as an athlete, he should be talked about like Babe Ruth, like the caller said.
Yeah, and I also think the civil rights component is a huge part of the story. It is, in a lot of ways, the story. You know, he was as meaningful to that cause as anybody ever.
So the generation before us was at war with them because they were racist or the cultural thing or whatever the case may be. Boston couldn't deal with him.
Right. And so maybe Boston minimized him.
And so Boston of that generation minimized him. And for our generation, we just weren't there to see it.
Correct.
I mean, because...
And so let's face it. We learn what we're taught or told, right? So we're told about Russell the winner, but we weren't told about Russell the activist. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's because there was resentment there. I mean, you know, Russell himself, and look, there's a million stories out there today that people can read, but I think it was in John Powers' Obit in the Globe where that famous quote that Boston was a flea market of racism. So there was a lot of distaste from Russell towards the city of Boston, and that had to go back the other way. And, you know, it never occurred to me, and shame on me for that, too, by the way, that when the caller said, we have the Ted Williams tunnel, but we don't have the Bill Russell tunnel.
Oh, obviously.
But again, like, I think sometimes we just drive through there and you don't think of it. And the fact is, we should.
Yeah. Given his history, would he want it?
Oh, I mean, I said this on TV last night. Yeah, we had this conversation on TV last night. You know, even in David Ortiz way or whatever, you know, what? Causeway Street.
Correct.
It should be Bill Russell Way. Like, there's
right.
No Causeway. That's like, that should be renamed. That should be him. Except, would he want it?
Good question.
You know, because he was lukewarm to all the other stuff that, you know, this took the statue forever, took the real public banner raising, number of retirement, took till 1999
yep.
to do all that. And I, you know, just coming at it late as a late boy, I've lived here 30-something years, but, you know, just my observance of it coming in the late 80s, early 90s, he never really was into this place. Like, I always felt there was always Shaughnessy said last night, it was always a force field, always a, and I feel that was right. There was, even though he came back and would be at the Garden much more than a guy like Larry Bird,
right,
who can almost never be bothered to come back here, Russell was here a lot more than that. But I never felt he was really, I don't know, warm to it or something. There was always something there.
Okay,
that I always noticed.
So the question then is, Is that his problem or was that our problem?
Oh, I blame us.
So do I. And so, like, I look at that and say, well, can you blame him?
Someone took a dump on his bed at
yes.
his home in Reading.
Yes.
What's he supposed to do?
Yes. And so I look at that and say, now, look, you can make a million different arguments. You know, do you recognize the guy now? And then is someone going to look at it and say, well, too late, after the fact. You know, what are you feeling, guilty? You're going to get that sort of argument. And I would say, well, better that than not doing it at all. Like, the guy needs to be recognized here. And what is whatever happened many years ago that we weren't necessarily, you know, privy to or aware of at that time because we didn't exist, like, you can still try to make it better. You can still try. And he's just too important a figure in this city, and we should know now, looking back, what he was really standing for. We should understand that and know that. That should be recognized. I'm with Murray. He's underappreciated. He really is. I mean, he's an extraordinary, and like, to me, the definition of Russell was his will.
Okay, can I be fair, though, with the underappreciation thing, though, too?
Yeah.
If I think, and we're not doing the Mount Rushmore thing, but if we have to order the greatest Boston sports athletes of all time, am I underappreciating Russell if I go Brady 1, Russell 2?
No, because that's close.
Because I think Brady's 6 or 7, whatever you want to call it, in the modern NFL is a tougher pull than Russell's 11.
Given what the competition
was. In the 50s and 60s, yeah. There were 8 teams when he started winning, and that's not to diminish him.
No, but the odds are shorter.
It's to say that I just think Brady's 6 or 7 in his sport in his time was an even greater accomplishment than Russell's 11 in his.
Okay.
So is that underappreciating Bill Russell?
No.
No.
No, but if you were to say who was a more impactful, you know, and this is getting a little corny, American.
Oh, it's Bill Russell.
It's not even close.
So it's a landslide.
Or Bostonian.
Right.
Even if Russell was at war with Boston for a time or much of his life, you know, his is a Boston story. And
he was on the right side of it.
And he was on the right one, and Boston was on the wrong, and it resonates, and it's still today. All the grief Boston still gets for its past is largely to do with his experience here. And, like, that's a real imprint on this city. Brady's imprint on this city, pretty close to zero.
Yeah, right.
He left. It's kind of like Bird.
Well, if you look at it, Bill Russell cared about people. Brady cares about his bottom line.
I, Brady and Bird, nothing to really. They could give two poops about this place.
He'll never come back.
They have no imprint on this place, no sort of resonance on it. They were just brilliant in their time here. But. They had nothing to do with the place before they got here, and nothing to do with the place once they've left. And I think Russell's far more ingrained, for better and worse, and positive and negative, and it's not even close.
Yeah, he was willing to fight you on it. He was willing to fight you on it, which tells you he cared. So, like, I'm with you. To me, his impact on the city, short term and long, was way, way better.
Okay, there's your...
way bigger.
There's your Russell... your Russell convo. You want to join it or anything else? Long commercial-free segment is next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The most popular afternoon radio show in Boston.
Back in your face, suck it!
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I thought today was ugly at the end for the offense. There was a lot of, I just said this to Tom Kern, and he just politely on Twitter pointed out this one comment that I'm sure will get people stirring. I said, they had a few reps out there that were a little reminiscent of the Tim Tebow era, Tom.
Oh, love that.
Ooh. Meaning,
love that.
Not that Mac Jones or even Bailey Zappi is Tim Tebow. Believe me, I don't feel that way. But get the snap, pat it, pat it, pat it. Nobody's open. Run around and scramble. When it's very obvious the point of the drill is not to watch the quarterback run 10 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. So too much of that, too much of even some scramble drill types of scenarios where Mac Jones is throwing it away because of a pressure, because I thought initially, really, the issue, probably if we were able to have the film here and watch it all back, we'd look at it and say, these receivers just can't get open. And so what's your reaction to that if I tell you Devontae Parker and Nelson Agholor and Kendrick Bourne and Jacoby Myers, even because this is the first team offense, is having trouble separating against the defense that the Patriots have right now? Because I don't think anybody thinks that highly of this defense, but they were sticky today in coverage, Chris.
That was Phil Perry over the weekend. The fourth non-padded practice, reminiscent of the Tim Tebow run offense for the Patriots. Today they put on the pads for the first time, went through more some quote-unquote real kind of football stuff, 11-on-11 stuff. Greg Bedard tweets, let the record show that the Patriots' first padded period using the Shanahan run scheme was an abject disaster, among the worst I've seen covering the league. Then he detailed the first 10 or so plays, and here's how they went. False start, interception, stuffed run, two-yard run, stuffed run, good plus run, overthrow stuff, no gain stuff. So some of the early reports on the Matt Patricia, Bill Belichick offense have been scary, to say the least. One of the items on the board here on a reentry Monday. Back to the phones. Jonathan and Randolph. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Hey, guys. There's not much I can personally add to what you said about how big of an embarrassment this whole play-calling situation is, but you were playing the Patricia audio a bit earlier, and I thought it encapsulates so much that the genius rocket scientist believes that the phrase divide and conquer means divide everything, makes the whole stronger, when it means literally the opposite of that, that by dividing everything, you make them weaker so you can destroy it. So he literally got that wrong, and I know it's a nitpick.
It's a great point. It's a great point.
That is amazing. I never thought of that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
No, you say that about the opposition. How do we beat someone? Divide and conquer. Split them up. Beat the crap out of them.
The Germans fighting two fronts in World War II.
Yes. Yes. It's not about how do we succeed. Well, we divide our tasks and then we conquer. No. It's the opposite.
It's a big divide and conquer.
Yeah. What a good point.
Yeah, you attack them from the inside. You divide them, and then you conquer them.
Bill Belichick has turned his offense over to guys he's close to and trusts at the expense of aptitude, experience, qualification.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a big divide and conquer.
The early results are frightening. What a great
point.
It's
his mentality at a buffet. No, we're going to get the turkey here, and then we're going to go conquer the bread and the vegetables.
Jack is in JP on Bill Russell. Go ahead, Jack.
Yeah, a couple of things. One is this notion that Bill Russell won championships against four white guys that could play in the bar league. Every one of those championships, he had to go through Wilt. Wilt was the most dominant player I ever saw. Wilt just dominated basketball, except he couldn't dominate Bill Russell. And the second thing is, today people don't understand why we still have trouble getting black free agents to come here. It's part of their culture. The thing with Bill Russell is remembered and talked about, among other things. Boston was a very, very hostile place. Boston was the Alabama of the North. And so I don't think people just appreciate what Bill Russell did. But again, going back to that, he wasn't great.
I don't know anyone who said he wasn't great. Let me just address those two things. You have never heard me. I have ragged on the Celtics championships plenty, believe you me. And the retired numbers are embarrassing. And yes, those banners were won in an 8-team league against a league that was not even close to being fully formed, without the best athletes on the planet, not even close. I never use that against Russell. And I guess by association I have been, but never once have you heard me diminish Russell's championships or Russell's accomplishments by going up against the 6'4" guy with the buzz cut and the belt and the knee pads. Like, I do that with the Celtics plenty when you throw Wosky or all those retired jerseys or the banners. I think it overplayed and actually hurt you in some way. That's never for me been a Russell thing, and you know that's true. I've never used that against Russell, nor would I. That fellow was legit, okay? I do think the Russell legacy is still stuck here. From LeBron, the best player in the league the other day, calling you racist as F. I think LeBron, though, has his own reasons, not Russell's reasons. And that's sad, or, you know, and I think in a measure unfair, because I don't think Boston's like it used to be. But the stain is still kind of there, which is really, that's tough.
Yeah, look, again, that's why these things never go away. That scars stay there forever, and they're always a reminder. And let's face it, we are talking about a guy in Russell's case. Mike, we throw around words in this business all the time. He was truly an icon. Okay, so the fact that he was involved in the middle of it, that's a major, major strike against the city that he was treated the way he was. He did more for Boston, you could argue, than, you know, save Brady in the history of the city when it comes to athletes. And when you talk about the social activism and everything else, he did way more. So the fact that he has a bad reputation, a bad perception of the city, or, you know, a bad relationship with the city, that's on us. That's on us, and you got to wear that.
This is a reentry Monday, so Derek, you have to do this in 10 seconds or less. Go.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call, boys. Just got home from summer camp.
Okay, I'm going to let you go. When I say 10 seconds or less and you tell me about summer camp, you're out. Sorry. Jimmy, he had a comment about WWE this weekend. Is there anything that needs to be said for 20 seconds or less?
No, my hope is that he was just thanking me for hosting a WWE watch party at Banners attached to the TD Garden, where we had a great, we sold out Banners to watch SummerSlam over the weekend.
You sold out Banners to watch SummerSlam over the weekend?
With 160 of my wrestling friends.
He had a drink named after him they were selling, too.
What was it?
What was it, Jay Stu?
It was a Jack Daniels and ginger ale, and we called it the Jay Stu and Ginger.
I saw the sign. I was like, this is great.
I love it. The Jay Stu and Ginger. Oh, wow. That sounds like something pornographic.
Reentry Monday. The Patriots and their offense led by Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick. According to Greg Bedard today, an abject disaster. According to Phil Perry over the weekend, shades of a Tim Tebow run offense. The Red Sox, I think, are also compelling heading into tomorrow. I haven't changed my mind. If they sell before tomorrow, if they come out of it, and I don't mean selling an individual piece. They can sell J.D. Martinez, but if they make an ad somewhere else, then that, you know, qualifies for what I think. If they come out of this as a net negative.
Waving the white flag.
For 2022, if they come out of this with a worse roster in 2022 than they go into tomorrow, that's a disgrace. That's a disgrace. And I don't care what it's looked like the last couple days or weeks. Maz disagrees with it. Maz has actually changed his mind. He wants to sell. That's on the table. Russell, the gambling bill, Sean Watson.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.